Hi, I'm Carlos Zeus. We've got news from Asia, Africa, and Australia in today's show, so let's get to it. Starting in Japan, there's a difficult decision and a controversy ahead of the Asian country. It needs to get rid of contaminated radioactive water, more than 1 million metric tons of it. Japan plans to treat this water and release it into the Pacific Ocean. The water was used at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. It was damaged back in 2011 when a powerful earthquake and tsunami swept over this part of Japan. The disaster cut off the nuclear plant's power and cooling systems. So to prevent its damaged nuclear reactors from melting down, Japanese officials had to pump in tons of cooling water. This water became radioactive, contaminated in the process, and some of it seeped into damaged tunnels and basements and mixed in with groundwater. Massive tanks were built to store the contaminated liquid, and they're expected to be completely filled up late next year. What Japan plans to do is remove most of the radioactive material from it and release it gradually into the sea. A radioactive isotope called tritium will remain in the wastewater. Japan's government says it has very low impact on people's health and that the concentration released will be lower than international standards. A United Nations official says this has been done before and that there's no harm to the environment, but local fishermen strongly oppose the idea. And China and South Korea, two of Japan's closest neighbors, have voiced, quote, grave concerns about it. They say Japan first needs to make full use of safe disposal methods and then needs to consult with them before emptying the water into the sea. The United States, a close ally of Japan, says the Asian country appears to have found an approach in line with global standards. If all stays on schedule, Japan will start releasing the water in 2 years. From Eastern Asia, we're taking you to Central Africa, where there are a lot of questions about the leadership and the future of the nation of Chad. This landlocked country of more than 17 million people has its share of challenges. The U.S. government estimates that more than 42% of Chad's population lives below the poverty line. It's struggled with terrorist uprisings and rebel groups that want to take over the Chadian government. And that government, a presidential republic, has just lost its president under mysterious circumstances. Apparently, he was killed while fighting with his army against a rebel group north of Chad's capital. What's happening here isn't confined strictly to Central Africa.
The death of President Idriss Deby, strongman of Chad for more than 30 years, will send shockwaves through capitals in the region and in the West. And it's a death in bizarre circumstances.
Right after he was announced the winner of a disputed election for a sixth term, the former general and military tactician traveled north to the front line to visit troops battling a rebel push on the capital. On state TV, an army spokesman saying he died of his injuries. His son is now in charge.
The Transitional Military Council reassure the Chadian people that all provisions have been taken to assure the peace, the security, and the republican order. Long live the republic, long live Chad. The president of the Transitional Military Council will be General Mohamed Idriss Deby.
For years, Deby has been a steady, if controversial, ally to Paris and Washington. The U.S. military has trained Chadian special forces and depended on its highly regarded but ruthless military to take the lead in the fight against terror groups in the Sahel and Lake Chad region. But Deby's closest ally was always France. It's where he got his own military training before seizing power in 1990. France uses Chad as a base for Operation Barkhane. Thousands of troops strong, it's key to fighting Al-Qaeda and insurgencies in the region. France's military has twice stepped in to stop attempted rebel takeovers of the capital during Deby's rule. Even as the president's reputation faltered domestically, accused of corruption and political oppression. On Tuesday, the French president said France had lost a brave friend.
A journalist in N'Djamena told us that the situation in the capital is largely calm, but the power vacuum created by the death of Deby could provide new impetus to rebel groups that are trying to take over. David McKenzie, CNN, Johannesburg.
10-second trivia. Which of these historic automakers was founded first? Auburn, DeSoto, Riker Electric, or Stutz? The oldest car maker on this list and the only one founded in the 1800s was Riker Electric. Next, a crash and a controversy involving electric car maker Tesla. Investigators are trying to figure out what caused the fatal wreck of a 2019 Tesla Model S last Saturday in Texas. Both of its passengers were killed when the car apparently failed to drive around a curve. It went off the road and hit some trees. Police say neither of the people inside was in the driver's seat. One was sitting in the back, and one was in the front passenger seat. One question is whether Tesla's autopilot feature was turned on. The company's CEO, Elon Musk, says it wasn't, based on information gathered so far, and that the street the car was driving on didn't have the lane lines needed to turn on standard autopilot. But if it wasn't turned on, what drove the car at what police call a high rate of speed? Tesla's autopilot feature has been blamed as a factor in several deaths since it was introduced in 2015. The company's website says autopilot does not make its cars autonomous and still requires active driver supervision. But hours before the accident, Musk had tweeted that autopilot was several times safer than human drivers. Federal investigators are examining the car's operations and the long-lasting fire that followed the crash. During the closures of COVID-19, Australia and New Zealand came up with the concept of a travel bubble, an international agreement that would allow people to go to certain selected countries without having to quarantine. This would help nations that are heavily dependent on tourism, ones that have been hit especially hard by coronavirus restrictions, to get some of the money they badly need. Different countries in Asia, like Thailand and Indonesia, were thinking about forming travel bubbles last year, but because outbreaks kept popping up in different places at different times, the bubbles didn't materialize. But one has been established in the first two countries to propose it.
A travel bubble opening between Australia and New Zealand on Monday, with the first of 140 flights planned this week across the Tasman Sea, with no passengers having to quarantine on arrival. That offer previously was available to New Zealanders travelling into Australia. Now New Zealand returns the favour, making that one-way travel corridor into a two-way travel bubble. New Zealand says that will mean billions for its economy, with Australian tourist dollars targeted. And of course, families split by these border closures for over a year will be reunited again.
It's really important. We're going back for Mike's dad's funeral, and we are taking this little guy to meet his family for the first time. So he's just 10 months old, so it's pretty exciting for us.
There's no replacing the human touch and those human relationships. So we're looking forward to getting over to New Zealand, speaking to our people, making sure that their welfare is great, but also that our business continues to prosper.
Both countries are entering into this agreement tentatively. Each say that they're willing to pop this travel bubble if there is an outbreak of COVID-19 on either side of the Tasman Strait. Both countries have had success with that sort of strictness when it comes to COVID-19. Just around 2,500 cases in New Zealand since the pandemic began, and just under 30,000 in Australia. That platform means the countries want to extend these travel bubbles further into the region. New Zealand wants to incorporate Pacific Islanders into its travel bubble. Australia has earmarked Singapore as a potential country that it could have a travel bubble with.
A new theory suggests it might have been easy for a human to keep pace with the Tyrannosaurus Rex, like you could outwalk it. Dutch paleontologists recently worked up some new calculations that took into account the T-Rex's large tail. They say that because animals prefer walking at speeds that minimize the energy they spend, the speed the T-Rex would have walked with a 2,200-pound tail behind it would have been at just under 3 miles per hour. Why does this matter? Well, it could help scientists better estimate the amount of food the animal would have needed to eat to keep its energy up, and how far it might have walked in search of that food. Their research did not estimate the animal's maximum speed, but maybe this can help us visualize what that might have looked like. So you wouldn't have died if you took it all in stride. With some speed applied, there's no need for a ride. You could sneak her away by taking one step at a time. It's gotta drag its tail, you could turn upon a dime. Just don't drag your feet or you could meet defeat. It needs to eat meat to survive and thrive, so don't be what's next. Just outrun the T-Rex, putting one foot in front of the other to stay alive. Wait! Don't leave just yet! We've gotta give a shout out to our viewers at Takema Herman High School, watching today from Takema, Nebraska. I'm Carl Azus for CNN.